In the dead hush of a cold winter night, way back in the deep folds of eastern Kentucky, a coal train rolled steady through the hills. Just another run through the shadowed veins of Appalachia. Nothing seemed out of place, just steel on steel, echoing through the hollers like it always had. But somewhere along them, quiet tracks, that ordinary journey took a hard turn into the unknown. What happened next weren't just strange. It was the kind of thing that makes a man question what's real and what's been hiding out there in the dark all along. Welcome to Kentucky Melody's Scary Stories from Kentucky, where we spin yarns about ghostly haints, creepy hollers, and spine-chilling legends from deep in the hills. So grab a chair, dim them lights, and let's dig into something spooky. Now, y'all listen close. It was in the witching hours of January 14, 2002, when a big old CSX coal train rumbled out of Russell, Kentucky. That iron beast was hauling near 16,000 tons of freight, black gold packed tight in its belly, headed down toward Shelbyana, winding through the hills like a steel serpent in the dark. The crew aboard that train, they weren't greenhorns. Nah, these boys were seasoned as cast iron. Railroad men who knew every creak, curve, and whisper the track could make in the dead of night. To them, this was just another graveyard shift, rocking steady through the shadowed hollers and fog-heavy cuts that snake through eastern Kentucky. But when they neared milepost 42, a stretch the locals only half-joking call the Wild Kingdom, on account of all the critters that dart out of them woods, they saw something that made the hair on their necks stand up stiff as broom straw. Piercing through the pitch black ahead was a pair of lights. Bright, dead on, staring them down like the eyes of something that didn't belong in this world. At first, the engineer figured it was another train coming head on, so he dipped the headlights to keep from blinding the other crew. Safety, you know. But as they rolled closer, metal screeching soft on steel, cold air rushing past the windows, it got clear real quick. Those weren't no train lights. They didn't move right. They didn't flicker or sway like a rail engine bouncing down a line. They just hovered, hung there, waiting. And what came next? Well, let's just say some things ain't meant to be explained by switch logs and signal books. Then, all at once, like something out of the devil's own playbook, that train's systems went plumb haywire. The onboard computers started flickering like a lantern fighting wind, screen lights jumping and dancing with no sense to them. Speed recorders spiked and dropped like they'd gone mad, and then, just like that, both locomotives lost power. Silence hit them like a slap. No engine hum, no electric whine. Just the long, drawn-out sound of 1,000 tons of steel coasting dead through the dark. Panic? Oh, it settled over that crew like a cold sweat. Men who'd seen blizzards and brake failures were sitting stiff, staring at the black ahead with white knuckles. And that's when they saw them. Three of them, floating just above the tracks like spirits that forgot how to rest. Metallic-looking things, smooth, silver-colored like polished steel, but nothing you'd call natural. No windows, no seams, no rivets, just slick, quiet, and wrong. Each one was glowing with these strange little lights, red, green, blue, maybe even colors that ain't got names. They didn't blink right, didn't flicker like man-made bulbs, more like something breathing. The lead one, it was hovering low, maybe 10 or 12 feet above them rails, dead center in the path of that powerless train, just hanging there like it was waiting on purpose. Now, with no brakes and no juice, all that coal and steel kept right on rolling, pushing forward under its own cursed momentum. The crew couldn't stop it. All they could do was brace and pray. At about 30 miles an hour, the front of that train slammed dead into the floating thing with a thunder crack so loud it seemed to shake the hills themselves. But it wasn't a normal crash. It was muffled, like the sound got swallowed up by the woods. That object, it clipped the top of the lead engine, bent steel like it was taffy, then glanced off and tore into the second locomotive, leaving deep scars across the metal like claw marks. It even hit the first two coal cars, shaking them like a hand from the grave. And then it was gone, vanished. The other two lights, they blinked out so fast it was like they were never there. Just poof. The night was still again, eerily still. Not a bird, not a breeze, just the sound of metal ticking as it cooled, and the breath of four men who suddenly realized they might have crossed paths with something not meant for this world. And the worst part, that silence that followed, it weren't peaceful. It was waiting. Then, just like that, the power came back on. No button pushed, no breaker flipped, just click, like somebody flipped a switch somewheres out in the stars. Lights hummed to life, dials blinked, and that low diesel growl come back like the train had just woke up from a bad dream. The engineer didn't waste no time. Got on the horn to the dispatcher down in Jacksonville, Florida. He told it straight. The lights, the crash, the shutdown, the whole strange tale. There was a pause on the other end, long enough to raise goosebumps. Then a voice, calm but colder in Riverstone, said, "Proceed to Paintsville Yard." Immediately. When they pulled into Paintsville around 5:15 that morning, things didn't feel right. Instead of seeing the usual yard hands in railroad suits, they was met by a whole crew of folks dressed in what looked like military gear, but not any branch the boys could name. No patches, no names, just dark uniforms and serious faces. One fella stepped forward, said his name was Ferguson, and not a word more. He didn't offer a handshake or a smile, just took charge, led the crew to some back office like he'd done it 100 times before. That's where it got real strange. They weren't just questioned. They was grilled. For hours. Every little detail wrung out of them like water from a dish rag. What they saw, how it moved, how it sounded. Then came medical exams. Eyes, blood, pressure, the whole shebang. When one of the boys asked to call his boss, Ferguson just looked at him flat and said, "Not an option." Then they took their phones, just scooped them up like they belonged to them now. Outside, the crew caught glimpses through the blinds. The damaged locomotives and the coal cars that had been struck, they was getting split off from the rest of the train, rolled under this huge white tent that hadn't been there an hour before. Looked like it popped up out of the dirt itself, stretching high and wide like a carnival tent from hell. Men in the same dark gear swarmed over every inch of those engines, moving with purpose, fast, practiced. Whatever they was doing, they'd done it before. When the questioning was over, the crew was loaded into a black van, no markings, and hauled off like ghosts in the wind. They was dropped off in Martin, Kentucky, where they were given more tests, more questions, and finally told they'd be reassigned. But the final word stuck like a thorn in the brain. "For reasons of national security, you are not to speak of this incident, ever." And they meant it. In the days that followed, the men tried to find out what had happened, asked around, pulled some strings. But it was like the earth itself swallowed the whole event. No wreckage, no tent, no strangers in black. When they passed through Paintsville again, it looked just the same as always. quiet, dusty, forgetful, like nothing had ever happened at all. But them boys knew better. They remembered. And what they saw out there in the dark, it didn't come from this world. Now, ever since that cold January night, what folks call the Paintsville incident has turned into one of them stories that won't stay buried. Like a root under the frost line, it just keeps growing, twisting, reaching for the light. Some say them railroad boys got caught up in something way bigger than coal and steel. Theories run wild, whispering that what they hit out there weren't no flying saucer, but something ours. Maybe one of them secret military craft, experimental and deadly quiet. That whole shutdown, the quick cleanup, the strange folks in uniforms with no name tags, it all smells like a government op wrapped up in shadows. But there's others. Folks who look at the whole tale and see stars. They believe what them boys ran into wasn't made in any hangar on Earth. They say it was something not from here, drifting just a bit too low over eastern Kentucky. And the way them lights moved, the way power just blinked out like a candle in a storm. Well, it don't sound like any jet or drone we ever built. Now, sure, there's always the doubters. The kind that'll say if there ain't pictures, it didn't happen. They point out how the crew stayed anonymous, how the company never said a word, how there ain't no official record to speak of. But that's exactly what makes the story chill your bones, ain't it? See, what rattles folks most ain't the lights, or the crash, or even the vanishing machines. It's the reaction, the fast silence sweeping away of it all, like someone was waiting for it to happen, and knew exactly what to do when it did. Ain't no one can say for sure what happened out there past milepost 42, deep in the Wild Kingdom. But if you sit long enough with the old-timers or listen real careful at the truck stops after midnight, you'll hear it come up, and the chill in their voice says they ain't talking about a story. They're talking about a warning. The Paintsville train collision, or whatever it truly was, still hangs in the mountain air like a whisper that don't quite fade. Folks around here talk about it the way they talk about haints or strange lights up on the ridgeline, quiet-like, with a glance over the shoulder. To some, it was nothing more than a case of mistaken identity. Maybe newfangled military tech wandering too close to regular folks. Others swear up and down it was a full-blown cover-up, carried out quick and clean by men who knew just how to bury a secret deep in Appalachian soil. And then there's the ones who ain't trying to explain it away at all. They say what happened that night was a true brush with the unknown. Not man-made, not earthly, and sure as sin, not accidental. Whatever truth hides behind them, silent hills and vanished tracks, one thing's for sure. Something did happen out there. You can feel it. Like a chill that settles in your bones when you pass milepost 42, even on a warm day. And just like all the best mountain mysteries, this one don't offer up no neat answers. It leaves behind questions, long, lingering ones that gnaw at the edges of your mind come midnight. What was it them men saw floating over the tracks? Who cleaned it up so fast? And why, after all this time, does it feel like something still ain't right out there? In the end, maybe that's the way of things here in the heart of Appalachia. Our mountains hold their secrets tight, and sometimes they only let you glimpse the edge of them, just enough to keep you wondering. So now y'all have heard it. The tale of the Paintsville train, them strange lights in the sky and a cover-up that vanished quicker than a fox in a hen house. But the big question still hangs in the air, don't it? Was this a real brush with something not of this world? Or just a case of man-made tech slipping where it shouldn't have been? Government ghosts cleaning up their mess before the sun came up? Truth is, only a handful know for sure, and they ain't talking. But what do you think happened out there on them tracks? Do you believe it was a true encounter with the unknown? Or is there a more earthly explanation hiding behind all that hush-hush and confusion? And here's something else to chew on. Have you, or someone you trust, ever seen lights in the sky that didn't act right? Heard stories from kinfolk, or had your own spine-prickling moment you ain't never quite been able to explain? Drop your stories, your theories, and your wildest Appalachian guesses down in the comments. We'd sure love to hear what y'all think, 'cause around these parts, the line between truth and legend is thinner than you might reckon. Well, now, we sure do thank you for tagging along with us on this strange and shadowy ride through one of Kentucky's most puzzling tales. If this story stirred something in your bones or got your mind wandering off into the dark corners of the unknown, go on and give us a like, mash that subscribe button, and don't forget to ring that little bell. It'll make sure you don't miss the next time we go poking around the unexplained. And I ain't one to nag, but I will remind you. Sometimes the line between what's real and what ain't is thinner than a spider's web stretched across an old mine shaft. So take care now. Keep your eyes on the sky and your boots on solid ground. And we'll see you next time, if you can make it back.